Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Inconsistent and intellectually dishonest arguments from the same people screaming, we need guardrails, and then the guardrails are unfair in the and playing the NCAAs. Pick a side, bro.
Russ Dellinger.
I think we got to be careful on pointing the blame. First of all, it's been going on for decades. But second of all, the blame might be the folks in Austin, Texas.
And SI's Pat Forty.
SMU is like, the guy that plays a Muni but wants to get into Steve Holwerda's country club, Portland Country Club, and is like, hey, if you let me in, I'll rake the traps every morning.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We've got a ton today. Maybe even some football.
Maybe.
We'll try. Maybe not. Conference realignment continues on. The big news of late is the ACC. The ACC, that's the Atlantic Coast Conference, is kicking the tires on Cal, Stanford, and, as our Ross Dellinger reports, SMU. I don't know, to form a, what would they go to then, 15 teams? 15
well,
teams
and stretch. 18.
What are they at now? I can't remember.
14, 15 plus Notre Dame.
Yeah, so that gets them to 18 with Notre Dame.
18.
Okay. 17 for football.
Ross, explain how Cal, Stanford, and SMU make any sense.
Because this is college sports where nothing really makes sense, especially these days when it comes to conference realignment. So there's a bunch of reasons why this doesn't make sense, which are most of the reasons, which include travel and being across the country and just the logistics of all this in the lack of really, maybe outside of Stanford, right, a big value brand bringing attention to you and enough value to you. I mean, there's a lot. But, yeah, how does this make sense? And from talking to folks within the ACC, I think there's a few reasons. One, some, I think, believe that there's strength in numbers, so to speak. And if everybody around you is doing it, hey, might as well do it too, right? The Big Ten's up to 18. The Big 12 and SEC will be at 16. This is clearly a consolidation race to get numbers. So there's that, number one. Number two, you've got some team schools in the ACC, as we reported back in May, seven schools that talked amongst themselves about leaving the league or trying to find a way out of the league. Of those seven, you've got two or three, specifically Florida State, that's been vocal in Clemson and maybe Miami, that, you know, might eventually challenge to get out, challenge the grant of rights. Certainly Florida State has pretty much said that publicly. So if you think you might lose members later on down the line, you'd want to replace them, try to get ahead of things. So those are kind of two reasons to look at this. It's just a race to see how many you can gather since everybody else is doing it, trying to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And, you know, you're kind of maybe getting ahead of some maybe defectors down the line here.
Pat? The melding of the Atlantic Coast Conference with two teams from the Pacific Coast. We might as well just call it the Oceanic Conference. I suggested maybe we just make the conference headquarters a train, an Amtrak train that goes back and forth across the country nonstop. Jim Phillips just rides a train while he works.
Can we get the bullet train then?
Yeah, see, exactly. We go back to our podcast stratagem of a bullet train. I think apparently in America, if you just say it's football, we need to do it, it gets done.
It might happen. You
know, yeah. Yeah. Please, we need $400 million for a bullet train because football. So a couple of things here. Yeah, in a rational world, it makes no sense. But this is not a rational world. You have two desperate schools in the Bay Area who do have things to offer. Among them is not a huge football following. But They are, as we've talked about on the pod, two of the elite academic institutions, two of the elite all sports institutions in a populous area, in an affluent area that people, especially university presidents, like to be aligned with. And on the ACC side, as Ross noted, you know, things are not all hunky-dory. Okay, there's turbulence below the surface, and it kind of bubbled up to the surface in May with the seven schools that are looking to get out. You have Florida State, like, openly calling for secession down in Tallahassee. And I think that there's with the ACC, they have been locked in this gridlock, this stasis. You need something to break the status quo to show, hey, look, we are doing something different. We are being proactive here. And if you can get into that late night TV market on Friday night, Saturday night, that might be a way into your ESPN contract to get more money without dissolving the grant of rights and letting Florida State just walk and Clemson and Miami and North Carolina, whoever may want to walk. This could be a way. Is it going to make Florida State happy? No. Is it going to make you a bunch more money? Probably not. But as Ross said, if there's a jeopardy of losing schools, you're adding them to hedge against that, and you are finding a way into a different window for a broadcast entity. So is this a great idea for anybody? Probably not. Certainly, if you're Cal and Stanford, it's the life raft you're looking for. Again, not ideal by any stretch, but it's a chance to remain viable as a power conference athletic program.
So if I'm the ACC, I better be real careful that adding any change to that ESPN contract or anything doesn't create the slightest fissure in that grant of rights. Because that's like opening the lost ark, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, this is not what you want. Florida State's like salivating, going, don't poke that thing. Okay, this is absurd. But for the ACC, I actually don't think it's that bad because you're rarely going to the Bay Area. Your teams only occasionally have to go.
Right.
And quite honestly, even for the non-revenue sports, a college kid getting to fly to San Francisco is, I mean, when you're in college, you would have, someone said, hey, you want to fly to San Francisco? Everyone, absolutely. That'd be awesome. California. Right. So not bad for them. It's one trip. I mean, there's only two, so you're not going out there much. You're up and down the East Coast. I guess you add SMU because you got to add somebody, and there ain't anybody left.
Yeah, I what I have been able to gather is SMU is on a slower track. Whether they get there or not, the primary focus right now is Cal and Stanford. But SMU has been discussed.
So I kind of get it for the ACC. I mean, what the hell, right? I mean, what the hell? If you can get a couple. You get half a million more for everybody. You get a million more, whatever. Cal and Stanford, I guess, they have no choice. And I guess isn't that much worse than traveling to the Big Ten? Kind of is. I mean, it's a long damn way to...
Well, yeah, there's no Nebraska close to you.
Chicago,
Louisville is as far west as you get, and they're in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah. They have an airport in Chicago called Midway. It's kind of because it's kind of Midway. Okay. But I guess you have no other choice. But, I mean, if you're attending Cal or Stanford, I would think, and fortunately we have a parent here of a former Stanford athlete, you want to be on the campus as much as possible. Like, this is Stanford. You're not there to play school. Yeah, you are. They have an incredible amount of unbelievable athletes, the Olympians, the national team, the Tiger Woods, the NFL guys, right? Whatever. But like the idea that you're like, I missed my Nobel Prize winning professor's lecture yesterday because I was traveling back from Blacksburg from a softball game. And that takes two freaking days. I mean, this is just so, Pat, if I don't know how many swim meets there are, but like, would that have changed your opinion on whether Brooke should attend Stanford if the amount of travel. Pat's daughter, Brooke, if you don't know, swam 5 years at Stanford.
Yes.
And then went on to the Olympics, won a silver medal. She's our favorite athlete on this podcast. And would that have changed the decision of whether it makes sense to go to Stanford as a student athlete if you know you're going to miss a lot of, and I don't know, swimming's kind of weekend meets. I don't know. I'm just wondering. What's your thoughts?
Yeah. It might have. I mean, it's a legitimate concern, a legitimate discussion point. And I will tell you, I mean, yes, my daughter was lucky enough to swim on the same team with Katie Ledecky and Simone Manuel. I mean, some of the greatest swimmers in the history of the sport. But what got her excited were those kind of things you talk about. Hey, you know, in this class, this epidemiology class, here's who we heard from, and here's the research he's doing, and that sort of thing. I mean, it is elite opportunity after elite opportunity after elite opportunity. And you would hate to have that compromised because, as you said, you are going to play some, you know, some games somewhere else. And the games count, and they're fun, but it would absolutely be a factor. Now, you know, you can get into the weeds of this, and I did. One athletic director I talked to had done a really good job of, like, going line item through his school's sports and saying basically more than half his sports would really not be impacted by conference travel. And this is somebody in the ACC. Yeah. Talking about going west. You know, like, swimming, there's maybe one meet you're going to go, and then you're going to go to the championship, which is going to be okay on the East Coast, fine, whatever. And there's a lot of other sports that would fit that bill. The problems are football, men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, probably field hockey, which, by the way, Stanford is in the America East and plays in, like, New Hampshire and upstate New York and Vermont already.
Field hockey?
Yeah. They're in the, okay. They were busy. I looked at their schedule for last year. It's berserk. It's crazy. Like, they would be thrilled to be in the ACC because then you can fly into bigger cities at least. Trying to find your way to someplace in New Hampshire.
Nice foliage, anyway, though.
Nice foliage. Very nice foliage in the fall. I'm sure they have great backdrops when they're whacking that ball around there. But no, I mean, look, it would be a factor. Absolutely. And I think for a lot of the academically serious people who want to play sports at a high level, it will be if this comes to pass.
Because if you got into Stanford and get into Duke.
Yeah, right.
You know, one thing that I kind of got into it in that story yesterday, but it was about the financial situation right now. And I think Pat kind of mentioned it too. You know, a big part of this is Stanford and Cal taking a reduced rate, you know, reduced share of distribution, and SMU taking no share of distribution potentially several years. And so that's getting a bargain. If you're the ACC, that's a bargain. So, you know, it's in the contract with ESPN that they have to offer pro rata shares, which means for any expansion member. Now that can be up for debate, right? Clauses in contracts can always be argued in some way. But there's a clause in the contract that says ESPN for any expansion new member offer pro rata, which means everybody else doesn't get a reduction and the new teams get a full share. So if ESPN does offer a pro rata and gives them three new shares for these teams or these schools, and Cal and Stanford are taking a reduction and SMU's not taking anything at all for a few years, well, then
it's basically
probably 1.5 of the shares goes to the current members, gets distributed. That's new money to the current members. Also money to offset travel, right? So that's the discussion of all this stuff happening as well right now. Yeah. And I think part of the reason why SMU is in the mix Look, SMU and the ACC have been talking for over a year. SMU talked to the Big 12, the Pac-12. They are intent on getting into a power league and maybe even, I think the offer to the Big 12 in the Pac-12, SMU's offer was something similar where they would not take for several years a distribution. And now I hear the years are even more than 5 years of no distribution. You know, they pitched something, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years to the Pac-12 in the Big 12. And now you're talking about more than five. So it's a bargain, right? And you might get a little new money. It won't be a lot, but these current members might get a little new money, and they'll get their travel costs covered too.
That's SMU is like, you know, the guy that plays a Muni but wants to get into Steve Holwerda's country club, Portland Country Club, and it's like, hey, if you let me in, I'll rake the traps every morning. I'll drive, you know, I'll mow the grass, I'll roll the greens, pick up range balls, just let me in.
Like, they're basically doing the dishes after the dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's beyond the coupon rate. Like we said, we said the Big Ten should sell a spot.
Yeah, right.
How much would Stanford pay to buy a spot in the Big Ten right now?
Yeah.
I would think it'd be a considerable amount. Yeah. So
all the guys at SMU that used to buy the Trans Ams for the players are now going to pay for the cover the costs for 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. They got the money. They'll run. I am I'm kind of won over on this. Like it's so effed up now. Yeah, what the hell? I don't know.
College Sports 2020. What the hell?
I'm also beaten down by this concept that, and I don't even blame fans or media or even coach. Like Chip Kelly's got all these ideas. Hey, everyone should be in one league. Well, then they got to share these harebrained ideas, because this is a harebrained idea. It's all a harebrained idea. It's like exhausting with these proposals. Some of the proposals are just, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to divide everybody up. Like, these people won't even have lunch with each other. 2 years ago, they formed an alliance, and then everyone shanked each other like it was the Folsom prison yard.
Oh, God, that's, you know what? Yes, everybody has an idea. None of them are very good ideas. I had a guy, you know, God bless him, on Twitter, and I don't know if he's a listener. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your Twitter input. Was like, Notre Dame should schedule North Dakota State. It's like, that's probably not going to happen. No.
ND versus ND. Yeah, I don't know. It's out there, man. It's out there. Dear leader spoke. Greg Sankey.
He did.
Came down from the mountaintop, went on the Paul Feinbaum show. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey threw a little spice out there. Good for you, Commissioner. You know, he's still holding out that they didn't really do any disrupting. Oklahoma and Texas called them, and he is correct. Everyone would take them.
Yeah.
If they had not taken the phone call, the ACC is about to take Cal and Stanford. Don't tell me they wouldn't have taken Texas and Oklahoma.
They tried to take Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, everybody tried to get Texas and Oklahoma. They wanted to go to the SEC. He added them. Deal with it. But to his point, they've got a six. As of now, they have the tidiest of leagues, kind of, outside of, you know, the MAC, which remains our gold standard of tidiness. But we have this contiguous group that has a national platform, Sankey said. And this is when he gets a little spicy. We don't need to be in four time zones to generate interest on the West Coast or really across the globe. That's a spicy shot at the clearly the Big Ten that needs to be all over the place to get anyone to watch out West, or at least that's the implication. He then talked about the playoff and what it would change. It looks like there's going to be some kind of alterations, maybe for 2024, certainly for 2026. There's not going to be six automatic bids.
No.
He said, how many conferences are even alive in 30 to 60 days? Yeah. Again, he offered, Swarbrick, Craig Thompson of the Mountain West, Bowlesby of the Big 12, they offered a long-term deal of 12 teams with six automatic bids, and the alliance, which was all up in their feelings about Oklahoma and Texas rejecting them for the SEC, decided to band against Greg Sankey. And now certainly the Pac-12 is regretting it, and the ACC could be. So I don't mind a little bit of snark here on some of these comments from Commissioner Sankey. Pat, what'd you think of what he had to say?
Yeah. You know what? And this is trademark Sankey, right? First of all, He's going to go on the SEC Network and do this, all right? And it's going to be 40 minutes of programming on the Feinbaum show. And they got everybody to listen and pay attention. And you should pay attention when Sankey talks. And then it was basically going to be reasserting the strength of their league, which is undeniable. And he's going to take a couple of shots because, you know he's, first of all, obviously still chafed about the whole Alliance thing and the way that went down and the monkey wrench they threw into the playoff. But I think he's also, like, bothered by the way the Pac-12 has been absolutely raided to the bones. And while, there's no doubt SEC was part of this, big part of the chain reaction, but they didn't kill a conference, and they have made geographic sense. And so he's going to point out and drill down on, like, look, yeah, our expansion was better than their expansion, basically. And so Sankey, a lot of people were waiting to hear what he had to say, and he fired his shots.
He obviously said some people that riled up or said some things that riled up a lot of people about realignment and how it's sad and disappointing. And a lot of folks will, right, yeah, point the finger at, well, you started this. I think we got to be careful on pointing the blame. First of all, it's been going on for decades. But second of all, the blame might be the folks in Austin, Texas. More than anybody, right? From what I understand, and probably what you guys have heard too, is they were going to move, right? They were going to go somewhere else, and they were shopping themselves, as Pat kind of mentioned there, like ACC, you know, Big Ten, SEC, and I think Greg Sankey said it quite a bit before. You know, when you get a knock on the door, and it's Texas, and they say, "Can we come in?" And if you say no, they're going to go to the house next to yours. You will let them in, right? And that's kind of what we had here. So in a way, the SEC started it, but and even more in a way, Texas was the one that triggered the latest cascade, I think, of changes. And Texas could have done the same thing, right, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. They decided to stay in the Big 12 instead of going to the Pac-12, which think about that decision and how things would be different. If they had decided to go to the Pac-12.
And that, I mean, yeah, if you want to unspool this back a ways, and as you said, we could probably go back to the early 1900s with this, but in terms of modern day, when ESPN granted Texas most favored nation status with the Longhorn Network, that set in motion the turbulence in the Big 12, and that's when it looked like Texas was going to leave the first time. And so that's kind of when... That was the first trigger for all of this, really, if you want to go there.
Basically, Texas keeps acting up and everyone else has got to respond. Now, I really don't blame the SEC for this. It would have been literal malpractice and you should be fired if you're the commissioner or you're the president of the SEC and you don't take Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, just you just have to do it. So I love blaming somebody. I mean, that's pretty much my thing. But I can't blame the SEC on that one. Let's blame Texas. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. All right. I want to get to this story here. We have some transfer portal waivers. The NCAA is back in the eligibility denial business. Always fun. And to recap the transfer portal, the history of the transfer portal, because there's lots of complaining, including much by someone who is the head coach in North Carolina about the transfer portal. You used to not be able to transfer. You had to sit out 1 year. If you wanted to transfer, you had to sit out. And coaches and schools could block a whole bunch of schools that you could transfer to as long as you were going to get a scholarship during that sit-out year. So if you're at Florida State and you want to transfer to Clemson and you're in and Florida State says, no, you're not going over there. We play them every year. You could still do it, but while you sat out, you had to pay your own way. So there was a number of prohibitive hurdles that basically blocked the transfers because many of the players did not have the money or to do it. Now, that got abused by the head coaches. It was not uncommon for kids to get blocked from 30 to 40 schools. Entire conferences banned it, all this stuff. Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State was infamous for this.
Yep.
So you would literally, there's really only like 64 power teams or whatever, mid-60s, and you could get blocked from 40 of them. Next thing you know, you're an ACC kid, and the closest place you can go is Cal. Oh, wait. That's an ACC team. Anyway, because of that, the NCAA got a little soft because kids were going, well, wait a minute. I need to transfer close to home because, you know, my mother is sick, my grandmother's sick, and all of that. And then the NCAA starts saying, well, you know, we're going to give a waiver because that the poor kid needs to be near his family. This led to what we call the uncles on dialysis era, when everybody had a dear family member they needed to care to. So everyone was going for the waiver system. And then the NCAA got overwhelmed because they're trying to play the role of judge on, like, how sympathetic is your sick family member?
Right.
Not a good spot to be. So then they said, all right, everybody can transfer now with no penalty at all. No, you don't have to sit out a year, and coaches can't block you from going anywhere. So if you want to transfer, you could be at North Carolina and you want to go to North Carolina State, you can just do it. Well, this led to enormous complaining. You might have heard about it.
It's free agency.
Somewhat a part of discussion. So everyone's yelling and screaming. The transfer portal's out of control. This is a complete this has nothing to do with the NIL. This is a complete NCAA creation, and it was a response to coaches misbehaving, then the NCAA screwing up. So now they're coming up with this rule. Well, then you could transfer as many times as you wanted, I think, or you could get a second transfer because I can't remember. Whatever it was, it was deemed, quote unquote, out of control. So now the NCAA says you can do it once, but you can't do it a second time. But they still have their waiver system back in place. So this week, North Carolina receiver Tez Walker and Florida State defensive lineman Daryl Jackson both tried to become immediately eligible. Jackson transferred from Miami. He was originally, I can't remember. Where was he originally? Somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maryland. He was at Maryland.
I think it was Maryland, Miami, Florida State.
Now he's back at Florida State because his mother is sick. And we hope she gets better. I'm not saying these aren't the, you know, I've rolled my eyes at the uncles on the dialysis machine. I don't want to come to that conclusion here. Whatever. This is where we're at. NCAA says no. North Carolina receiver Tez Walkers is kind of interesting. He signed with North Carolina Central, never played a game because their season was canceled in 2020 due to COVID, went to Kent State in Ohio. Now he's trying to come back to UNC. He's saying, I only transferred once because I didn't actually play at NC Central. So that's a little different. Both of those were denied. And now we have the coaches, the same media, the same fans, everyone who screamed the transfer portal is out of control is now screaming that the NCAA is a bunch of terrible people because they're trying to bring the transfer portal under control by holding these, not just handing out waivers. Did I recap that sort of right?
Pretty much. Pretty much. Yep.
Your thoughts.
I have many thoughts. So, yeah, exactly. This is, you know, the NCAA was handing out transfers like Halloween candy, and people were losing their minds because guys are at their third and fourth school and they're playing immediately eligible, and people couldn't stand it. And so then the NCAA tries to close the loophole, and it's immediately, oh, the heartless NCAA, look what they've done. Let's examine this here, okay? First of all, Tez Walker, interesting case. Was actually going to go to East Tennessee State. Tore up a knee. Didn't go. Gray-shirted, as they say. Then it was NC Central. Then he couldn't play. COVID. Then it's Kent State. And now it's North Carolina. So, look. And apparently his grandma is ailing. So, he has some absolute sympathetic parts of his storyline. Yeah. You know, like, I feel bad for him that the abuse of the waiver system is basically stopping with him. You know, he's the last guy who couldn't get through this ridiculous loophole. But a couple of things. Sitting out a year does not ruin your career. It does not end your football career. It is not something that is, nothing has been taken away from you by sitting out a season. And there have been people in the media who immediately picked this up, and North Carolina was stoking it, perhaps because he's a good receiver and they want him to play with Drake May, perhaps. But, you know, the heartless NCAA, and as somebody pointed out that this is in the backdrop of conference realignment and everything like this, the NCAA is not involved in conference realignment. So don't, that you are absolutely conflating two different things. And as a matter of fact, the president of the NCAA, Charlie Baker, basically came out and said, I don't like conference realignment. What's going on? So don't take that and say, look what the NCAA, look how hypocritical the NCAA is. That's these conferences doing that. And again, Tez Walker is not being prevented from playing for the University of North Carolina. He's being prevented from playing this season. It doesn't end his career. This is the rule as it was supposed to be. This is the rule that was abused like hell, and they're closing the loophole. I'm sorry it closes on him, but it needs to close on somebody.
This feels like a no-win situation for anybody, including the NCAA. I don't know what the right answer is. Do you let nobody have a second transfer? Do you let everybody have a second transfer or unlimited transfers, granting all the waivers, like Pat said they did at some point? There was a stretch of that. Or, as one person yesterday kind of put it to me, do you scrutinize the evidence and handle it case by case, which they have done before, but it ended up being that they granted everybody, you know? Everybody. And if they grant one this time around, right, they're going to end up having a bunch of lawsuits and legal issues on their hands, which, you know, the NCAA isn't good in court, you know. So that's an issue. So I don't know. I think what we're going to end up having is unlimited transfer. Like, it's going to happen. Is it happens in 2 years or 4 years or 6 years? Does it happen because of a congressional bill? You know, that's been bantered around a little bit. It just feels like at some point we're going to have an open transfer market, which isn't going to necessarily be good. It certainly isn't probably going to be good for academics. But this just feels like a crappy situation for everybody, and you kind of hurt for these players who, I mean, Jackson in Florida. I mean, that case is heartbreaking, and I think his quotes were something like, you know, my mom thinks it's her fault. And it's just sad, awful.
Well, yeah, I agree. But here's the thing. You can't have it both ways. The same people screaming are screaming about how the transfer portal is screwing up the sport and we need guardrails. And the moment they put the slightest guardrail in, they're screaming that they shouldn't be a guardrail.
Yeah, exactly.
So I either have unlimited transfers. I don't actually think it's that bad. Now, I would have originally held a very hard guardrail on this and said, I've said this over and over ever since they started doing these waivers. You sit out 1 year. Don't let the coaches block, and don't let the conferences say you can't transfer within the conference, because I don't think either of those is fair. But you sit out 1 year. It is not a punishment to sit on a college campus and get an extra year of time and eligibility and academics and all that. I would have done that. That would have been my policy. Kid can transfer anywhere he wants. He has to sit out. And I think that would have been that you would not have a wild transfer portal, but it would be fair. Okay. You want to go back and transfer and be near your mom who's sick, or, you know, Uncle Jimmy really did stub his toe. Someone's got to, you know, limp him around, whatever. Go ahead and do it. Hey, you know what? You're not playing the game, so you're free on Saturday. Okay. You're free on Saturday. But if they end up basically with open transfer, I don't think it's that bad. But listening to the exact same opportunistic, inconsistent, and intellectually dishonest arguments from the same people screaming, we need guardrails, and then the guardrails are unfair and playing the NCAA. Pick a side, bro. Pick a side.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you're arguing for straight free. Cause what, if you're the NCAA, what do? You say, all right, screw it, man. You got transfer all you want. It's not my kids. It's leaving or coming or whatever. It's not an existential threat that a kid from Kent State wants to catch passes from the number one player, number one quarterback in the country. Totally get it. Let them do it. Tough break, Kent State. But this is the argument, and Mac Brown, God, I love the guy, but me and Sal, I think y'all play. I mean, this is an interesting case because he only kind of transferred once and all that, but I don't know. I think you either got to play or don't play.
Well, and he transferred, I think he transferred a day before they implemented the rule.
That argument is a little different, but I guess I don't want to pick on Mac because it's not, it's a little different. There is an actual legal argument, not just a heartstring, but I don't know. Watching the same people who have been screaming about how awful the transfer portal is, then scream about how the transfer portal should be more lenient is like, come on, right?
Yeah. And that's the problem. And, you know, if we perhaps come across as hard-hearted in some of this, it's because we've heard all the lies. They aren't all lies. I mean, some of these kids have had legitimate hardship situations, but we have heard over and over the made-up reasons why he's got to be eligible to play this year. He has to be able to play, you know, because so-and-so is ailing. Well, maybe spend more time with whoever's ailing and less time playing. I've been beaten down by listening to the flimsy reasons for why transfers should be immediately eligible, and then they were all granted, and then they try to close the loophole, and everybody loses their minds about the heartless NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, they got to pick a lane on this. Yep. All right. It just means more. I'm going to get the USA Today poll, by the way. They actually had a poll come out.
Oh, yeah.
But first, briefly, it just means more. As someone who loves It Just Means More and watching videos of street fights, in this case, a dock fight. Did we see the Montgomery Riverfront brawl?
Wow.
Montgomery, Alabama, to recap. These clowns pulled their, there's a riverfront where they have these bigger boats. I don't know. They like tour boats. And what do they call it? Like pond? They're not pond. The riverboat. These clowns pulled their little pontoon boat up to the dock where the big riverboat that holds like tons of people was supposed to dock. So they're parked in the way, right? And it's like putting your little Cessna in up where the Delta jet's supposed to get. So the dock worker comes out and tells them to move. And these three idiots jump out and attack them. And all of the people on the dock, on the riverboat, even one guy who jumped into the river and swam to the dock, start attacking the three miscreants, the pontoon boat people. Now, there's a clear racial element in this thing. I don't know that it was racial, is more a coincidence, but this is how it's been played out. But the brawl itself becomes absolutely wild. Okay. There are like 40 people in this brawl. There is a chair getting hit. Again, there's a guy swimming to a fight. Swimming.
Amphibious assault, man. He's coming ashore.
Navy SEAL.
Marines. Yeah.
The Navy SEAL. That guy. Okay. So this fight, you've seen the video because it's gone anywhere. That guy is 16, the swimmer. His name is, I believe, Aaron. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He now has a publicist. Okay. Yeah. He has a publicist. This is what his publicist wrote. In the face of adversity, Aaron selfishly came to the rescue of a fellow colleague, showcasing bravery beyond his years. Maybe he was a dock worker too. Is that it? I don't know. Anyway, he swam to a fight. The chair is now famous. It's absolutely everywhere on the internet. And great brawl. And we have a song from G-Mac Cash, one of my from Detroit, who was so moved by this, he wrote a song about the Montgomery Brawl. He writes a lot of songs. They're all the same song. He just changes the words. Sean, can you play the song? And I know this has nothing and everything. You want to know why Alabama's so good? It's because they're ready to throw down on the dock at any point. They will swim to beat your ass. That's why the tide of all those titles. Play this song.
Montgomery Brawl. Shout out, bro, that could swim. Montgomery Brawl. It really are them. Montgomery Brawl. Shout out, Unc with the chair. Montgomery Brawl. Everybody that was there. Montgomery Brawl. Threw the hat off at the start. Montgomery Brawl. Man, shout out to the girl. Montgomery Brawl. Hey, I'm really proud of y'all. All right.
That's enough.
I don't know how much we had to bleep out. I'm sorry.
Cuz came out of the water. Yeah.
Oh, Unc with the chair. Oh my God. I'm a bad person that I find so much joy in a dock brawl.
You are. It's true.
It was just because the bad guys got their ass beat, you know? There was a clear, overly in these fights, you see, you don't know who, like, get your boat out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, man. It's a riverboat park and not your little sorry pontoon. Who knew Montgomery, the Montgomery riverfront is lit.
Hey, that's, you know what? Montgomery, wait till Iron Bowl week. They get after it like that down there.
Yeah, this wasn't even Iron Bowl.
I covered some SWAT games at the Crampton Bowl there downtown Montgomery when I covered back in the day of covering Jackson State. One side story, Jackson State played at Alabama State. They played in the Crampton Bowl, and Rick, there were like literally 35 penalties in the game, and about half of them, roughly 15 to 18 of them, were personal fouls. It was wild. Oh, it was like the most penalty yards I've ever seen in a game. And so after the game, Rick Comedy, the Jackson State coach, was walking off the field. Jackson State lost at the last minute on a penalty of some sort. And Montgomery's TV station stuck a camera right in his face as he's walking off the field. Game just ended. Crazy game. Penalties everywhere. And he dropped like 5 F-bombs right in front of the camera on live TV, man. It was just fantastic.
They could have thrown about 18 personal foul flags on that boat dock, man.
Yeah.
Montgomery's the spot. I've only been down there for the federal prison a couple times. Huh. Not to serve, just to visit. But yeah, I spent a lot of time.
All right.
Not for
more to that story.
I went in and then out. I got out. All right. USA Today coaches poll. Couple interesting items here. Georgia, number one. No kidding. It's not unanimous, though.
Nope.
61 votes for the Dogs. Michigan came in number two. They got 0 first place votes. Alabama third. They have 4 first place votes. Respect the Montgomery Docks. Ohio State Buckeyes are fourth. They got a vote first place. So those are your 3 first place vote getters: Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State. Oh, the diversity at the top of college football. What a shocker. Also, next year, those 3 teams will receive votes for first place.
Yes, they will.
And the year after, LSU is 5th, Southern California 6th, Penn State 7th. That's 3 Big Ten East teams in top 7. Florida State 8th, Clemson 9th, Tennessee 10th, Washington 11th, Texas is 12th. The top 12 teams, 10 of them, are either current or future Big Ten SEC members. That's all you got left is Florida State, Clemson. Notre Dame came in at 13, Utah 14, Oregon 15, TCU 16, Kansas State, Oregon State, Oklahoma, Carolina, North is 20. Got to say North now. South's getting going. Then you got Wisconsin, Ole Miss, Tulane, Texas Tech, and Texas A&M. At 25 in honor of the Netflix Bobby Johnny Manziel thing they got in the 25. Anyway, any thoughts or surprises, Pat?
I think it just feels to me like Tennessee might be a little overrated at 10. Lost a fair amount from that team. We'll see if Joe Milton comes through at quarterback. Maybe they might be right there. But I do think they're going to lose twice at least to Alabama and to Georgia. We'll see where else there might be some troubles there for them. I kind of like Washington, maybe a little underrated at 11. I think they can win the Pac-12. I think their offense is going to be as good, if not better, than USC's. They did lead the nation last year in passing offense, and Michael Penix and all his receivers are back. Trying to look out. Like, Oklahoma's still got to prove it to me. I would not put Oklahoma in the top 20. They were 5-7 last year. If their name isn't Oklahoma, come on. Give me a break. Oregon State, we talked about them last pod. Dark horse, I think, in the Pac-12. And on a revenge tour this year that should be really fun to watch. So those are some of the ones that jump out to me.
Five Pac-12 in the top 18.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? It could be their best year. Yeah, this could be arguably their best football year in a long time. I mean, they have the best crop of quarterbacks of any league in a while, probably, certainly this year. I mean, they've got like six quarterbacks, right, that could be drafted.
Well, look, hold on. They got, I'm going to just go through it. Oregon State is DJ Ungulay. Oregon's Bo Nix.
Yep.
How do you say the last name?
Cam Rising.
Cam Rising. Yeah. Okay. Washington's got Michael Penix. And Southern Cal's got the returning Heisman.
Caleb. Trophy. Yep.
Caleb Williams.
Yep. So, and then you got the kid at Arizona. He's really good. Yeah. Deloria. He's really fun to watch. It's really good.
The thing
good.
About the history of college football. Watch this. The ratings for the Pac-12 are going to be like through the roof this year. Yeah. And if they were going to market now.
Yeah.
They might get $30 million or $28 million because all of a sudden they're going to be like, oh my God, look at all these huge games.
Yeah. Well, they're going to work it out.
But since it didn't work out timing wise, no longer exist.
Yeah. It's crazy. And actually, as we're doing the pod on this Wednesday morning, some news has broke that kind of connects to this Pac-12 situation. Gene Smith announced that he's going to retire next year. At Ohio State, as athletic director next June. But in his goodbye press conference, which is unfolding right now, he said what we all kind of knew, right, in that Fox brought new money to the table in order to get Washington and Oregon to the Big Ten. And it just shows you that no matter how great of quarterbacks that a league has and how great of teams that a league has, TV networks right now are kind of pulling the strings on, or at least one TV network pulling the strings on some of these huge decisions that kind of shake the landscape of college sports. But it's interesting to see Gene just kind of say that, you know. But anyway, that skips past kind of the biggest news, which is obviously one of the most respected athletic directors in the country is hanging it up in about 8 months.
Yeah, big time career. Notre Dame football player, Ohio State AD, one of the most powerful people. Always appreciated how he carried himself in good times and tough times.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Got out there and was the face of that ridiculously successful all sports program.
Yeah. All right, back to the top 25. Congrats, Gene. What else you think, Ross? Anyone stand out here?
What surprised me a little bit, just because of the amount of returners they have and the talent they have, is that Texas A&M is only at 25. And look, I know the preseason. I hate preseason polls because it's all about what happened last year. In last year, they won 5 games, so I get it. I get why that they are low in that regard. But they've got a lot of good starters coming back. I think they have the most. They may have the most experienced returning group as far as statistics in the country, I believe. They're certainly the most, I believe, in the SEC, or the second most in the SEC, maybe behind Missouri, when I just read some stuff about experienced starters returning. And so it surprised me where they are. I'm kind of like Pat. I was a little surprised that that Washington was at 11. I figured they'd certainly be in the top 10, maybe the top 8. I agree. I think they're a team that could challenge USC and win the Pac-12. Other than that, I don't know. I hate preseason polls.
It's going to sort itself out. I would say that. Like, it's not one of these deals where like one is in one league, two is in another, three is in a third. Yeah. You know, like, and they're not going to meet, and they're staring at I mean, this is going to, I don't know whether Michigan should be ahead of Ohio State and Penn State. I don't know if Penn State should be, like, we're going to find out.
Yep.
I don't know whether Bama, should LSU be ahead of Bama? We'll find out. That I really like. Like, there's a lot of, this is going to sort itself out. Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, 1-3-4. None of them are returning a quarterback. Are all going to be able to maintain that spot. They have great recruits. They Alabama, though, seems to be floundering for a quarterback. We'll see. They got a lot of good players on those teams, but can they all go with a new QB? Perhaps, right. Perhaps not. Michigan's the one with all, I think that's why they're so high, is they have the skill players returning, including J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah. Yeah, the Alabama-Ohio State dynamic's interesting. I mean, they have been the quarterback capitals of college football the last 5 or 6 years. The last four QBs, at starting QBs at each place, all were Heisman finalists. 6 of the 8 were top 15 picks. Six of the eight have had, we don't know yet about Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, but they were the 1-2 picks in the draft. They're going to get a chance to start right away, but they've had some stars come through there. And so now, boy, big shoes to fill, and we'll see whether these next guys are good enough, whether there's going to be a drop off at those positions or not. Georgia, I think, is so talented in so many other areas, that, you know, you don't need a quarterback to step in and play like Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. You need a quarterback to step in and not make mistakes and hand off, make a few plays.
Last year, TCU, I don't believe they were ranked. If they were, they weren't ranked at all, right?
Here's no, the they were picked no, seventh in the Big 12.
They're coming off of like a 5-win team, weren't they?
Yeah, right.
And they were new picked coach. Seventh.
Okay, the so 12. They were not picked. Let's not say, could there be a someone who's not ranked, but anybody outside the top, let's cut it at Oregon, say 16 on, or anybody else that you could see being a playoff team?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's several. I'll go down 17, 18. Kansas State, Oregon State. Yeah. I mentioned Oregon State before. I mean, I don't know if they're – we'll see if DJ plays like he did in his relief appearances as a freshman, or if he's just kind of one of those guys who's okay like he was a sophomore, junior. But if he has a good year, really good year, Oregon State's dangerous. Kansas State, they won the Big 12 last year. They were really good, and they bring back a lot. They lose Deuce Vaughn, the running back, but, I mean, that's a very solid program in a league that's a good league. If you get to the top that we saw with TCU last year. If you can win the Big 12, you should be in the playoff picture unless you're, 9-3. So I think K-State, watch out for them as well from outside of that top group.
Well, I said it earlier, but A&M's schedule doesn't really set itself up to make the playoff. In the SEC, I think they've got obviously all the SEC West teams, and I think they play Tennessee too. But A&M would be on there. I think Kansas State is a good one. As well. I agree with Pat on that to put Kansas State on there. But how about some of the others receiving votes? What if we had a surprise from, say, Florida or something that just kind of came out of nowhere? Billy Napier been on the roll recruiting on kind of a roll lately. And I know they've struggled last year at times, but just from talking to people in Gainesville, it seems like there's some positivity around the team and the improvements that they've made, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Go ahead. What do you got?
I just like, who received two votes that I think, could be a player in the ACC is Duke. Duke was 9-4, 10-4 last year? I think 9-4. Quarterback Riley Leonard is back. Mike Elko did a phenomenal job coaching them. They're going to be good on defense again because that's what Mike Elko does. And I'm telling you, Labor Day night, they open with Clemson in mighty Wallace Wade Stadium, which will probably be like 70% Clemson fans. But that's a bit of a trap game for Clemson right off the bat. Watch out for Duke.
Yeah, Dan, I think you're going to say North Carolina. I agree.
Yeah.
Drake May and them, if they can fix the defense.
I was going to go the other side of that, of Tobacco Road. But if you've got the number one draft pick in Drake May if he plays like he is projected. And they got a lot else there, and they've got a good coach and a good system. I'm not sure North Carolina isn't a team that can win the ACC and get in that playoff. So I like what South Carolina's doing. I just think that's too, you know, Ole Miss and South Carolina, it's just a hard lift, you know. But this is going to be real interesting when they get to that 12-team playoff and you're not sitting there going, okay, can you, you know, because you can get two teams out of the Big Ten and the SEC now, obviously, but you got to basically be 12-1, 11-1, something like that.
Yeah.
It's just so many games to win. So that'll be it. Briefly, I think you guys have a homework assignment, listeners and us. I watched it last night, but the Johnny Manziel doc is pretty wild. We tend to break down these docs. We did Manti Te'o last year. It's a wild one. Pat Forty is in it briefly. He's declaring in negative fashion that Texas A&M is not exactly a power as it enters the SEC. Yeah. Of course, you did not know that Johnny Football
negative
was about
Nancy
the show.
Pat Forty.
I was pretty excited. Pod represent. Pod stand up. It's a wild story. I mean, how he beats drug tests. It's a sad story, and I don't know if the story's over because at the end he does not seem that he's actually rehabbed. Mm. He's drinking a beer at the end, so I don't. Yeah. Anyway. Everyone watch it. We will have a great discussion of it because on Monday it's very entertaining doc. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. It's highly entertaining. It's all college football or a lot of it. And then the Browns. But Johnny Manziel was certainly a massive part of college football this century. And so we'll talk about it, and you can see Pat's smiling face in there.
There you go. There's the real draw.
Yeah, the real draw. They had to bring the sex appeal, right? Get the female listeners, maybe. I don't know. Is that why they put you in there? A couple stories here. Actually, I think huge NIL recruiting news. West Virginia, the Big Timber Brewing Company, has entered the Beer NIL Funds Derby. Trust Lager will fund the Country Roads Trust. And I don't know, is this the brewer or the AD? The brewer, the president, Stephen Ford, says it's a little too soon to speculate on how much money this could create. I will speculate. Freaking millions. Are you kidding me? You're selling beer to West Virginia?
You know what they need to do? Load up that little tiny subway car thing they got. Mass transit with the Trust Lager. Cases of that, deliver that back and forth.
If you're going to get hammered on the Trust Lager so that the Mountaineers can buy some good players, ride that little train. Don't drive.
That's right. Exactly.
Get on that little tram thing. Why'd you build such a small subway? Nobody knows. It has three stops and the cars fit four people. It's like a Legoland. Disneyland has a much more sophisticated system. Disney World, whatever. What is Disney with the World. Train? They were drunk on the beer when they designed that little train.
That was one of my favorite things, finding that little two car train.
Worst public transportation.
I'm like 3 hours from there. I just want to go there, take the train, maybe do a video for the pod.
I have been there and seen that train and wanted to ride it. I actually did want to ride it. And I was like, where does it go? And they're like, it goes like three spots. It's like a downtown spot and a campus. And then like it's it. And I was like, anyway, look out, buy your Mountaineer stock right now. This program is going to be on the rise. Once the people of West Virginia realize that getting hammered is going to help the Mountaineers. Because Iowa, you know I love you. You know I love you, Iowa and Iowa State. Daddy is home. The Mountaineers.
If there's
you do not want to drink with these people.
Two things the Mountaineers love is their West Virginia athletics and their drinking.
So. That's right. Look out. So this could be a factor. ACC, someone should try it. Big Ten should grab West Virginia right now. This is the sleeping giant. It's like they just hit oil and they're going to get a dollar a barrel or something.
USC has one too now. fight on pale ale or fight on
that's not gonna do crap. They need, like, those guys drink vodka because they don't want the carbs or something. That's not
USC. It's classic USC. They're in with a big brand, Stone, which makes good beer, but you know, it's not like they're not with the up from the bootstraps brewery.
They're gonna a couple guys on a yacht down in Orange County sipping a couple of them. That's not gonna do it. When you're down the hauler slamming 30 racks every night, that's how you get linebackers. That's how you get linebackers. Mm-mm. Country roads take me home.
When you're down in the hauler slamming a 30 rack every night.
Oh, you don't think it's happening?
Oh, what? I think it's happening.
It's happening. An Italian man was crushed to death the other day when thousands of wheels of Parmesan style cheese fell on him.
Oh my God. Death by cheese.
Giacomo Chiapini, 74. He had a good life.
R.I.P.
Was buried when a shelf broke in his warehouse. He had a cheese warehouse, thousands of wheels weighing 84 pounds each. Oh, sorry. Sorry to laugh. Crushed him. He was crushed by cheese.
Wow. There wasn't much left to him. Oh, my goodness.
If you're going to, like, we're all going to die. I hate to break it to you. How many people would take it? I live to 74 and then die in a cheese accident. Pat 40.
You know, thoughts. I mean, cheese avalanche. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to make it to 84 before the cheese avalanche gets me, but you know,
10 more.
It could be worse. Could absolutely be worse.
Yeah. I don't know that I had that high up on my how to die list is because I mean, there's potentially suffocation, right? Like you're crushed and suffocating. This
probably
terrible.
Got beamed off the head with the cheese.
And golly. Well, I mean, that didn't sound good either, but okay.
No.
That's nacho cheese.
Oh, boy.
I think dying.
Cut us off, Sean. We're done.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, no. We got one more.
Oh, boy.
Virginia Beach man went to court. Pat, you'll be excited about this. So that he would be allowed to keep his emotional support animal in his house.
God. Oh boy.
He already has several cats and dogs, 3 ducks, a turkey, and 6 hens.
Oh my God.
But there was a dispute on whether he should be allowed to keep this animal, his emotional support emu. Now, this is not Doug from that Doug from the
that terrible
insurance commercials. Yeah. The emu. He had an emu. He said they are majestic creatures, and it is an emotional support emu. It's just a magical thing, raising a bird and having it fall in love and trust you completely. Creepy. The bird brought me out of my darkest days.
Mm.
If that's your neighbor, should this guy be allowed to have an emu?
He can have it. Emotional. He can have it if I can shoot at it. How's that? Can we make that bargain? He can keep the thing in the yard, but I get to take shots at it and see if I can remove the emotional support emu from the earth.
Is an emu annoying? Is it loud? Is it makes a lot of noise in those commercials?
I don't know. They're ugly. They're ugly. I can tell you that. I really don't have any other information on them.
Probably thinks you're ugly.
Probably does.
Emotional support emu, Ross?
I need to Google. I was Google imaging emu because it's like not an ostrich. What am I thinking of?
It's another ostrich. Like one, right?
It's kind of like an ostrich. Yeah, it is. Okay, now that I see it. No. I'm not big on the emotional support things. In fact, I was in the airport. Every time I'm in the airport, there's a person, if not 2 or 3 people, with a giant dog. Wrapped in a blanket or something that says, you know, emotional support dog or whatever. I don't buy into this emotional support. Maybe I'm not sensitive enough about this issue. I don't know, but
well, we're very sensitive.
Long standing pod rant there.
What is it?
I don't care if he wants an emu in his house. Have at it. I don't really care what you put.
Just
in
don't
your
bring
house.
It on the plane, please. Just
yeah,
keep the emu
not allowed
off the
in
plane.
The plane. Not allowed God. In the restaurant. No.
Yeah.
No, emu in your house. I mean, go for it. What do I know? All right.
I think I sent a picture to the pod from a flight I took out of Cincinnati of some woman who had a emotional support dog in a stroller. And like, hey, she better not be getting on my plane. Fortunately, she was not.
Yeah, it's a problem. All right. That's the pod. Wetzel the Horse still 0 for the year. We'll again run this week. We'll see. We're in a slump. I will drink NIL beer all weekend to try to help. I think I'll do my part. But I'm not shying away from the losing streak. I'm not just a sunshine soldier. You know, I'm going to hype it up. Anyway, that's our pod. Unless there's a need for an emergency, and who knows, there might be. We'll be back next week. We appreciate everybody listening, subscribing, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us. It's listener drive month. Gear us up for the season. Find somebody to listen so we keep doing this podcast. We appreciate y'all. We'll talk to you later.